You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. Welcome to the show. It is Monday, August 11th, 2014, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. So glad you could join us for this short week of shows. We're on today and we're on tomorrow, but starting Wednesday, we got replays for you because we'll be off in Seattle, Washington, actually Seattle and Tacoma. I'll be at the Tacoma Dome all day Thursday as part of CannaCon, what is billed as the world's largest business-to-business cannabis expo. So I'll be there all day Thursday, and then Friday, I'll spend the morning there at the CannaCon, and then head out in the afternoon to the Seattle Hemp Fest, the 23rd annual Hemp Fest taking place this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Admission is free, but please donate. Please donate when you go in, even if it's just a buck, but you know, you should be given 10 bucks. This thing is worth 10 bucks. You're going to see so many bands, so many stages, so many speakers, and so much weed. You got to be there, man. So Seattle Hemp Fest, I'll be speaking four times. Herb Thrashel will be speaking twice. The schedules are up on the 420radio.org calendar. Just go to 420radio.org/schedule. And I know we've been having some troubles with the website loading. We are getting those fixed tonight. Got my web guy coming in. We'll get to work on that for you. So again, shows today and tomorrow, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I will be off in Seattle taking care of business at the Seattle Hemp Fest. But for today's show, oh, what a great show we have got for you today. We'll start things off with the 420 Radio News. And joining us from Colorado, we've got Priscilla Seibin on the line. Hi, Priscilla.
What's up? How's it going?
Good, good. How was your work training?
Oh, it was good. We've been kicking some ass where I work at. So, yeah, I've just been on the ball with work. I put in so many hours last week, so.
Well, that's good to hear. Good to hear. Get some hours, yeah. Get some paycheck, help you out there. And anything going on in Colorado there over the next month in August?
Yes, there's a couple of events going on. There's a secret cup. Shh, don't tell anybody. Shh, you didn't hear that. That's at the end of the month. I didn't say that. And there's some other stuff going on. There's a list of like cannabis-friendly events that's on the cannabis.co's website. So I kind of just follow that every weekend and pretty much just, you know, living the dream here in Colorado. I'm gearing up for school, so I have to like stay focused.
Understandable. But, yeah. All right. Well, we've got other news in the headlines in Colorado, including the latest tax revenue reports from the state of Colorado. We now have numbers all the way for the first half of the year, Priscilla. We're excited to get to those. Mm-hmm. Also, the American Psychological Association is having its convention this week. We'll hear what they had to say about marijuana. The city of Riverside is spending a lot of taxpayer dollars just to keep marijuana dispensaries banned. We'll tell you how much. Another story out of Portland, Oregon here on cannabis use by people who are parents or are taking care of kids. This will shock you. And also, the state of Utah has finally issued some CBD-only medical marijuana cards. We'll tell you all about that coming up next with Priscilla Seibin in the 420 Radio News. And then in Behind the Headlines, we are going to go behind NFL crime and punishment and have you rank the relative crime of various activities by recent NFL players, and you try to guess which one is the one punished by the NFL the most. I'll bet you can already guess. And then coming up at half past, we got Dr. Mitch Earlywine. He's going to tell us about what these guys are saying at the American Psychological Association about marijuana and the developing teen brain. And speaking of teen brains, they also launched a brand new public service ad campaign in Colorado, don'tbealabrat.com. We've got four commercials that they're showing on TV and in movie theaters to discourage teenagers in Colorado from using weed. And Mason Tvert's quote on it is the best yet. We got that coming up at the end of the show in the Radical Rant. Also, stupid stoner story from Florida, again the redundancy, in hour two. So stick around. It's the Russ Belville Show.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, your ticket to Seattle Hemp Fest.
My name is Richard William Riggs. I'm a judge in Oregon. In 1998, I was elected to the Oregon Supreme Court, where I served until October of 2006. I've been asked to give my views about the new approach to marijuana initiative that is going to be before the voters very soon, and I'm happy to do so. I've read the measure, and I'm going to vote for it. And the reason I'm going to vote for it is because I think that it's inevitable that marijuana is coming to Oregon in one form or another. And I hope it comes in the form of a good bill like this one. If we're going to have marijuana in Oregon, this is the way to do it. Drugs and marijuana particularly play a huge role in the economic engines of most of the local gangs. The gang-related violence that occurs is often as a result of bad drug transactions of one kind or another. I think the proper legalization of marijuana and the control of it in an appropriate way is a substantial step forward to eliminating some of those problems. Using the criminal justice system to enforce certain societal social norms is kind of a waste of resources. It takes away from the criminal justice system dealing with forcible rapes and murders and so forth. I've read this measure, and I'm going to vote for this measure. And I think anybody who reads the measure and gives it careful thought will probably join me in that vote.
Herb Thrasher Flower Hour, every Friday at 5 and 8 Pacific on 420radio.org.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Priscilla Simon.
It's your 420 Radio News for Monday, August 11th, 2014. Taxation and regulation of marijuana has reaped almost $30 million in revenue for the state of Colorado in the first half of 2014. June was the best month so far for recreational pot sales, that's right, with an increase of 19% over May's totals. Experts believe the increase is primarily due to more retail outlets opening up, leading to almost $25 million in sales. Recreational pot sales are closing in on medical pot sales as well in terms of tax revenue produced. While medical pot is taxed at only 2.9% sales tax, recreational pot pays that tax plus 15% excise and 10% special sales tax. Still, in January, medical pot raised twice as much in tax revenue thanks to greater sales volume. But in June, medical tax revenues were only 20% greater than recreational tax revenues. It appears as though Colorado is on pace to meet the estimate of $70 million a year in recreational pot taxes.
Oh my God, $30 million in tax revenue from legalized marijuana in half a year. Priscilla, you know what that means. That means you must have suffered at least $300 million in social costs, according to Kevin Sabet. I mean, remember how he tells us all the time, for every $1 we take in alcohol and tobacco taxes, we spend $10 in associated social costs? So I guess there must be $300 million in social costs in Colorado. Now let's see if we can add them up, okay? $300 million in social costs must be from the increased crime. No, wait, crime went down. Okay. Must be from the increased use among teenagers. That went down. That went down from 1 out of 4 to 1 out of 5. Okay. It must be from all the people, the lack of productivity in the work. No, it can't be that, because there's 10,000 pot jobs in Colorado and a whole bunch of new industries that have popped up. I know. It must have killed tourism. Because people hear it's the pot. No. Right here it says tourism's up 6% there in Colorado. That can't be. Oh, I know. Home values, right? Because of all these pot smokers and pot zombies roaming the streets, people's home values have gone up by 20%. Well, that's interesting. Gosh, Priscilla, I guess we're going to have to dig a little bit deeper to find these $300 million in the pot costs.
Yeah. Researchers presenting at the convention of the American Psychological Association stress that once a week marijuana use by people under age 25, quote, is not safe. Krista Lisdahl, the director of the Brain Imaging and Neuropsychology Lab at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, told attendees that weekly marijuana users under age 25 show cognitive decline, poor attention and poor memory, and decreased IQ. Dr. Alan Budney, a rehab specialist, warned that, quote, much of what we know from earlier research is based on smoking marijuana with much lower doses of THC than are commonly used today. And that, quote, it is just as hard to treat cannabis addiction as it is to treat alcohol addiction, end quote. Dr. Budney says in addition to addiction, car accidents, chronic bronchitis, and decreased life achievement are the most likely among potential consequences of teenage marijuana consumption.
Wow, I hate to have to disagree with a guy named Budney.
No kidding.
But it's like a guy named Earlywine studying alcohol, right? Anyway, but yeah, Dr. Budney, you know, I watched my dad try to kick alcoholism cold turkey in a trailer once for 3 weeks, picking hallucinatory bugs off his skin, screaming and puking and having constant diarrhea. So, gosh, I sure hope I don't ever have to try to quit pot if it's that hard. Oh, jeez. My. These guys continue to undermine their own credibility anytime they say anything that equivocates alcohol and marijuana use. Now, I know we've done that too, you know, treat it like alcohol, regulate marijuana like alcohol, but only in the extent that, you know, we want to make it legal and not punish people who use it. To compare marijuana and alcohol in any measure of harm is absolutely ridiculous. And the more you do that, the less young people listening to you are going to believe anything you have to say. At the age of 17, I knew what an overdose of alcohol was. I'd done it many times and ended up puking and, you know, hungover and all of that. Kids know that. And so when you tell them that marijuana is that bad and they don't get the hangover and they don't have the DTs when they try to quit, well, that they know that you're just full of hot air, Dr. Budney. We're going to save the rest of this for Dr. Mitch Earlywine, who I'm sure will have plenty to say about Krista Lisdahl and Dr. Budney's pronunciations on teenage marijuana use.
The legal cost of the city of Riverside, California to enact and maintain its ban on medical marijuana facilities have topped $800,000. Riverside was the plaintiff in a case that went before the California Supreme Court in 2013 that affirmed the right of California localities to ban dispensaries through zoning codes. Most Inland Empire cities ban dispensaries except for Palm Springs. The legal fight since 2010 involved two firms charging the city $805,000, and the city anticipates it can collect about half of that amount in court judgments against more than 80 dispensaries shut down by the city.
So let me get this straight. It costs about $10,000 per dispensary then to shut it down. Do you think a dispensary could generate $10,000 a year in taxes? Well, then wait. No, wait. This is since 2010. This is since 2010, so we're talking 4 years, right? You think they could generate $2,500 a year in taxes each? Easily. See, this is the cost of your moral prohibition. This is the cost of people turning their nose up at medical use, at demonizing medical users, at saying, oh, it's just about potheads getting high and not in my backyard, NIMBYism. And all this does is it frustrates the sickest people, the people who you really do think should be getting medical marijuana, if you're one of these anti-pot people. It really frustrates those people because they're the ones that don't have jobs, that don't have easy access to transportation, and you're forcing them to drive all the way to Palm Springs or all the way into Los Angeles just to get their medicine. Meanwhile, the people that you don't like using the medical marijuana, the ones that you think are just the stoner slackers that are hiding behind a recommendation just to get high, you're not stopping them at all. They're still getting marijuana. I've been to Riverside. I've been to the Inland Empire. There's plenty of weed there. Hell, we've held cannabis cups out there in San Bernardino, okay? So it's not like there's a lack of marijuana out there. What there is a lack of Riverside getting any of the tax money from it and a lack of tax money in Riverside to do other beneficial things for the citizens because you're spending all your money on a couple of law firms and helping them buy, you know, $1,000 dinners and $1,000 suits. That's all you're helping right there. It's time for California to get their head around this. And I do believe by 2016, we'll see some comprehensive activities trying to legalize marijuana in California statewide and finally bring some common sense to California's treatment of marijuana.
Hell yes. A mother in Portland, Oregon, is upset that Oregon Health Sciences University required her to sign a waiver when she insisted on breastfeeding her child. At issue is her participation in the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program and OHSU's doctor's recommendation that she should not nurse her child with marijuana in her system. Quote, "We do understand the benefits of mother's milk," the hospital said. "We also don't want to be caught in a situation where a mother continues to use and says that we never gave her information on it, never informed about the risks, and so it's really a way of documenting that the parents acknowledge the risks, and we can't stop her from using it," end quote.
Yeah, this is OHSU's way of covering their ass. This is just a CYA signature that they want. And really, what OHSU ought to be concerned about is the fact that only 13% of medical schools surveyed teach their doctors that we even have an endocannabinoid system. If you knew that we had an endocannabinoid system, you know that the fetus develops the endocannabinoid system by about the 14th week of development in utero. This was recently discovered by German researchers, I think last year. And then you would also know that the endocannabinoid anandamide is the one that helps to regulate feeding and regulate appetite. And anandamide is produced and shows up in trace quantities in mother's breast milk. It's theorized that the anandamide in mother's breast milk is what helps to start the suckling action and to motivate that infant to want to eat, to help to build that infant's appetite up. Now, this may not, you know, be out going out to say, hey, you know, do 16 dabs and then, you know, breastfeed your kid. But I doubt very much that she was that kind of user or kind of irresponsible person anyway. According to the stories I read, her midwife had suggested that she use medical cannabis to treat nausea, the typical nausea, morning sickness that young mothers can sometimes get. And there have been no studies published to show any harm or any transmittal of THC, an exocannabinoid, through mother's breast milk. But even if there was a fear of this, don't you think we'd have seen it by now? Don't you think Bob Marley's kids would have shown up with some sort of difficulty we could have picked out? Don't you think Jamaican kids would somehow be statistically different? There'd be some evidence of it by now, and we just have not seen it. This is more scaremongering and more meddling around with the rights of parents who happen to use cannabis. And in a way that we don't see for parents that are using prescription pharmaceuticals.
Yeah. The state of Utah has issued the first 11 cards allowing people to possess cannabidiol oil smuggled in from out of state. The Beehive State was the first among 11 states now that permit the use of cannabis oil high in CBD and almost non-existent in THC for people suffering with intractable epilepsy. The registration cost for the cards was dropped from $400 to $200 recently when officials realized they'd overestimated the program's startup costs. Cardholders cannot get the CBD oil in Utah, but must instead acquire it from neighboring Colorado. Taking it out of Colorado is against Colorado law, and transporting it into Utah is against federal law. But Utah will not prosecute cardholders over CBD oil, which can cost up to $900 for a month's supply.
Well, as long as you're willing to go to Colorado, break its laws, spend $900, break federal law taking it back, and spend $200 to get protection in the state of Utah, then you're perfectly okay to treat your kid with a CBD oil that has been shown to mostly not be effective unless it has some sort of THC combined with it at some ratio or some level that will be illegal under Utah law. Progress. All right, some quick notes here on the schedule for the following few days. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we'll be appearing at CannaCon in the Tacoma Dome and at the Seattle Hemp Fest. I'll be at CannaCon in the Tacoma Dome from 9 to 6 on Thursday, these times all Pacific time. On Friday, I'll be at CannaCon from 9 to 11, speaking at Seattle Hemp Fest at 12:45, back at CannaCon for 2:30 to 5 o'clock. Herb Thrasher speaks at 6:50 at Hempfest, and then I'll be back at Hempfest at 7 through midnight for the VIP social and party that's at the Hemposium. On Saturday, CannaCon from 9 to 12, speaking at Hempfest at 1:50, and then the band's Chimera at 4, December at in Red at 7. 9 to 11 at CannaCon on Sunday, Mac and Dub at noon, Herb Thrasher 12:50. I'm at 2:50 and 5:45. So we got plenty of schedule. Check it all up at the420radio.org schedule. And that's all the time we got for the news. Thanks to Priscilla Simon for joining us, and good luck as you get ready for school.
Thank you. See you.
See you. Have a happy 420 there, Mountain Time Zone. When we come back, we're going to take a look at how the NFL ranks relative crime. You know what's number one. We'll be right back.
.420 Radio, your ticket to the High Times Cannabis Cups.
Join us for the International Cannabis Business Conference September 13th and 14th in the Portland Ballroom at the Oregon Convention Center. The International Cannabis Business Conference will focus on the emerging cannabis industry in Oregon, the United States, and around the world, putting you in front of the industry's foremost entrepreneurs, political leaders, and attorneys. Also showcasing over 40 cannabis-related industry exhibitors, offering VIP lunches and free nightly networking events. Prepare yourself for America's next great industry.
I don't use marijuana, but as a teacher of 36 years, I can tell you lots of other people use it. I don't believe in prohibition. I don't think it works. Prohibiting it hasn't stopped anybody from getting a hold of it. I would like to see it regulated so that maybe kids can't get a hold of it so easily. I know they get a hold of it now very easily. I support a new approach to marijuana. I support legalizing it. It's with us. It's not going to go away. And if we can get money through the taxation, we can also educate our kids about it. That's why I support it.
Congressman Andy Harris thinks it's okay for medical marijuana patients to go to federal prison, even though Maryland passed a medical marijuana bill in April. On May 30th, Congressman Harris voted against an amendment to respect Maryland laws and protect Maryland patients. Why would Congressman Harris vote to send patients like this to prison? 72% of Maryland residents support medical marijuana. Is Congressman Harris out of touch with Maryland?
Are you a hypocrite? If you live a closeted cannabis lifestyle, you are. Read about seven people living a closeted cannabis lifestyle who are on the verge of coming out in The Hypocrites by Mara K. Eaton. Available at areyouahypocrite.net. You can purchase the book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, also available on iTunes. Check out Mara K. Eaton on Facebook as well. Learn more at areyouahypocrite.net. At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. 23 minutes after the hour, and time for us to go behind the headlines. That's right, it's time for our look at sports and crime with Crime in the NFL. All right, you know how we play our game. We give you a breakdown of the terrible things some NFL players have done to get suspended from playing football professionally. Let's see if you can organize them in order from the worst offense to the least based on the punishment the NFL handed out to the players involved. Number one, A. Player A tested positive for marijuana his rookie NFL season that he spent on injured reserve. He then played in Canada for 3 years and didn't take any NFL drug tests. Then he tested positive for marijuana after joining an NFL team that plays where adult recreational marijuana use is legal. That's player A. Tested positive for marijuana, a third time. Player B. This player ran an illegal dogfighting operation where he admitted to electrocuting and killing many dogs. Following his 2-year prison term, he was welcomed back into the league with the help of lobbying by one of the league's most influential coaches. That's player B. Player C. This player was charged with 3 felony firearms crimes that were just recently reduced to misdemeanors. He was also arrested for DUI, and he was also involved in a fake bomb threat at the Los Angeles International Airport. That's player C. Player D. This player drove drunk and wrecked his car, killing his teammate who was riding in the passenger seat. That's player D. And player E. This player knocked his then-girlfriend out and dragged her unconscious body through a hotel lobby. Player E. All you have to do is put the players in order, A, B, C, D, and E, in the proper order of how they were punished from worst to least by the NFL. And the proper order is... Well, save your time trying to figure it out because I already put them in order. A, B, C, D, E. A is Patriots cornerback Brandon Browner. His 2005 drug test failure, combined with not taking league drug tests in 2007 through 2010, meant that his 2013 failure was considered a third strike, eligible for the NFL's lifetime ban. You got that? He didn't play a single game his rookie year because he was injured, but he failed a drug test. He didn't play a single game for the NFL for 3 years, but since he didn't take drug tests then, they counted that as a second failure. And then when he had a third failure playing for the Seattle Seahawks, you know, where weed is legal, that was considered his third strike. He's eligible for a lifetime ban. The Cardinals' Darrell Washington and the Browns' Josh Gordon, who, by the way, was the NFL's leading wide receiver last year, were suspended a year each for just their second failed marijuana tests. Now, B, of course, is Michael Vick. You know, the guy who was... Now, he was technically suspended indefinitely by the NFL when he was convicted of running bad news kennels in the summer of 2007, where they were electrocuting, torturing, and killing dogs for fun. But he was welcomed back to the league in the summer of 2009 once he served his 23 months in prison. Can we really count suspension from the NFL as punishment when the guy is in prison anyway? Suspension as punishment would only be if he wasn't allowed back into the league a few years when he could play. That's a real punishment. And even if we consider Michael Vick's 2 years off the field while he was in prison as punishment, that's just twice the punishment that Darrell Washington and Josh Gordon got for their second failed marijuana test. Player C is San Francisco 49ers linebacker Aldon Smith, who took a voluntary leave of absence after his DUI arrest, missing 5 games. This is the guy who had the fake bomb threat at LAX. And he's currently petitioning the league, and the team anticipates he'll get 4 to 6 game suspension. Player D is former Cowboys defensive tackle Josh Brent. He retired in 2013 following 180 days in jail for intoxication manslaughter when he wrecked his car in December of 2012 and killed the Cowboys' Jerry Brown Jr. He's now applying for reinstatement to the league following a stint in rehab. He also could face a 4 to 6 game suspension. Player E is Ravens running back Ray Rice, who was arrested in the offseason for assault on his then-fiancée and now-wife, Janae Palmer, who he knocked unconscious and dragged out of a hotel elevator, according to security camera footage. The league handed him a 2-game suspension last month. And by the way, an ESPN commentator, Stephen A. Brown, Smith, got a 1-week suspension for talking about domestic violence in the wake of the Ray Rice incident. He made some inappropriate comments, you might say, and got suspended for a week. And now, recently, ESPN commentator Max Kellerman was suspended for a week for mentioning that he once hit a woman back in his younger days. And he got suspended for a week, not so much for mentioning that he hit a woman, but for violating ESPN's ban on any of their commentators talking about the Ray Rice incident, because ESPN and the NFL are in such in bed together that NFL doesn't want this black eye from the Ray Rice incident. It is trying to ban any talk of it on ESPN. So that we all have this straight. Torture and kill dogs, and you get half the punishment as a player caught failing a marijuana test for the second time. Drive drunk, kill your passenger, tote illegal guns, and or make terrorist threats in an airport, and you might get the same four-game punishment as a player caught failing a marijuana test for the first time. And beat a woman into unconsciousness, and you get half the punishment as a first-time pot drug test failure. Because, of course, the NFL wants to send the right message to the children.
420 Radio, turning red states and blue states green.
The International Cannabis Business Conference takes place September 13th and 14th at the Portland Ballroom in the Oregon Convention Center in Portland, Oregon. Featured speakers include Oregon Senator Floyd Prezansky, U.S. Congressman Earl Blumenauer, Daily Dish blogger Andrew Sullivan, author Doug Fine, and Harborside CEO Steve D'Angelo. To learn more, visit our website at internationalcbc.com.
The Marijuana Business Association, or MJBA, are proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show. It is the mission of the MJBA to establish integrity and legitimacy, create common market standards, provide market intelligence, and develop best ethical business practices for participants in the emerging legal marijuana industry, including commercial hemp, medical marijuana, and recreational marijuana for adults. Learn more about the Marijuana Business Association and visit MJBA.net to join today. That's MJBA.net. Got a comment, question, complaint, or request for 420radio.org? Visit our contact page at 420radio.org/contact today. The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, treat law enforcement with respect and stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney." Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at omarfigueroa.com.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs, we've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pens the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
Welcome back, everyone. 33 after the hour, and we're getting on the line here with Dr. Mitch Earlywine in SUNY Albany, still trying to get an answer on the mobile phone. And in the news today, we wanted to talk to Dr. Mitch about the American Psychological Association, which is currently having its meeting, annual convention, I suppose, and numerous researchers are getting on stage to talk about the dangers of the marijuana, particularly to the kids, some of this typical stuff that we've heard in the past. Let me go to the Time magazine write-up on this. In Time magazine, the American Psychological Association's annual conference was held last week. And Krista Listdahl, an assistant professor at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, in a press release said, quote, "It needs to be emphasized that regular cannabis use, which we consider once a week, is not safe and may result in addiction and neurocognitive damage, especially in youth." Well, this is a bit troublesome for me when I hear about addiction being referred to as once a week use. Let's see if we've got Dr. Mitch on the line. Are you there, Dr. Mitch?
Indeed I am.
Oh, fantastic. Thanks for joining us. I was just warming up the audience, letting them know that the APA, American Psychological Association, had their meeting last week. And some of the reports coming out on this are things I wanted to definitely get your opinion on. Krista Lisdahl, an assistant professor at University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, says it needs to be emphasized that regular cannabis use, which we consider once a week, is not safe and may result in addiction and neurocognitive damage, especially in youth. And what bothers me most about that statement is it says, especially in youth, as if even adult use once a week is something we should be worried about. What can you tell us?
Well, what's funny is she's funded to do these brain imaging type studies, and she needs to show something's there or she's going to be up a tree. So they take every single brain area they can possibly find, and there are literally millions of them, and try to compare them between folks who use and folks who don't to say something. Then they make up some story about how every part of the brain is all connected, and away we go. The idea that once a week use is a sign of addiction is part of this wild DSM craziness where now craving is one of the criteria for addiction. And, I mean, Mallory Laughlin and I have shown people who can crave marijuana after using it one time.
So just wanting to use marijuana because you find it enjoyable, is that craving?
What's slippery about it is then if you basically say, wow, I'm really eager to use, or something along those lines, you get these craving questionnaires that are often 8 items, kind of like that. Like, hey, it sure would be great to have some marijuana right now, which, I mean, I got to admit it, it reminds me of that old Katie Lang song, Constant Craving.
Yeah, there you go. Is cannabis use then more dangerous than TV watching for kids? I mean, isn't there some studies showing, you know, too much TV has these problems too?
I'm not on top of the most recent form of that data, but we've definitely seen at least the state that your brain goes into after about a steady half hour of TV would certainly be detectable with some of these evoke potential brainwave type machines. So pretty soon we're really toying with things that just aren't of any consequence anymore, and it's just scientists playing with new gizmos.
You know, it's not like we want to come across and say there's no risk to kids, especially young people, if they are hotboxing every day, right? But when Lisdahl comes off and says things like, all evidence suggests that frequent marijuana consumption harms young people, isn't that, you know, a bit hyperbole? Don't we have some evidence that moderate use isn't that harmful?
Well, what's sad is that stuff gets ignored. So that Peter Fry data where we're always hearing about the 8-point IQ drop in the frequent users, that sample used 6 days a week or more. There's a subset in his same sample that used only on weekends, only once a week, and their IQs went up 5 points. But you never hear about that.
Yeah. And another researcher presenting at this American Psychological Association, in addition to, you mentioned Dr. Fried, which is one of my favorite names in drug research, Dr. Alan Budney, another one of my favorite names, says that addiction, car accidents, chronic bronchitis, and decreased life achievement are the most likely among potential consequences of teenage marijuana consumption.
So it's funny, Alan Budney has also made a lot of grant money off of this notion of withdrawal and dependence with cannabis, and he said these are the most likely. What he's hiding is these are maybe 3% likely, maybe 1% likely, but it's the only thing that they can grab onto anymore. Decreased life achievement? How are you going to follow somebody around to measure that?
And how do you get a control?
Exactly. So the poor guy who didn't use any marijuana, he's got one more A in a class, and so suddenly his life is all about achievement. It's insane, and it's sad that I resigned from American Psychological Association in the 90s for this kind of shit.
Yeah, I'll bet more than a few people did.
Exactly.
Speaking of the 90s, Lisdahl's presentation pointed out that 6.5% of high school seniors smoke pot on a daily basis, compared with 2.4% in 1993. So just how much stupider are today's kids?
Well, what's funny is we actually just don't have any data to confirm it. There's no way to go back. We're looking at SAT scores. We're trying to, you know, control for things that have already been there. But also, I feel like literally a big portion of that change is not in who is actually smoking, but who's willing to fess up. Mm-hmm. Now that some of the attitudes have changed about cannabis since the 90s, people are less likely to lie on these questionnaires. And so is it really that it's been this about 6% all along, or is it just now that times have changed, people are actually willing to say so?
Yeah, that would be something to try to tease out of the stats here. I have this graph that I show all the time of lifetime marijuana use in America, and you see it go up in the 70s, you see it dramatically decline in the 80s and early 90s, and then from the election of Bill Clinton, you see it rapidly ascend to about the same levels it was before Reagan came in. You know, like if you could erase 1980 to 1992 and just draw the graph of the rest of the years, it looks like a pretty steady slope. And I've always wondered if it was because of the intense fear-mongering of the 80s that just fewer people were admitting it to the researchers.
Well, what's funny is there are techniques for making the questionnaires more anonymous, and we are finding that folks are less likely to lie now than they used to be on a whole bunch of things, including cannabis use. And I can, you know, walk through the kind of wonky research method style of that, but the bottom line is the more anonymous you make it, essentially, the more people are willing to fess up. And if we had used those techniques on these surveys, we probably would have done better. Of course, a high school student who's sitting down in school filling out a questionnaire with a teacher in the room is probably not going to be as likely to say it as somebody who can respond more anonymously.
All right, we've got a couple more assertions here from Liz Dahl and Budney I want to get to, but let me remind the Pookie in the chat room says, oh, if only we could erase 1980 to 1992. In a lot of ways, right? But I did want to remind the audience that if you've got a question, get it into our chat room there. We'll get it asked, and you can also call in live at 971-533-7111. But this interesting thing from Krista Lisdahl, again, from University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, she again reiterates, this is in the USA Today story, that the close look at the under 25 age group shows cognitive decline, poor attention and memory, and decreased IQ among those who regularly smoke pot, defined at least once a week. And then she goes to say the basic demo, where marijuana use begins in your late teens, it peaks in the early 20s, and it drops off between age 23 to 25. And here's the quote. Is it a coincidence that use significantly goes down at 25 when the brain is at its full maturation? I don't think so, end quote. Which, to me, sounds like she's trying to say once your brain fully develops, you become smart enough not to smoke pot.
I mean, that's really the meta message, and I hate to say it, but it undermines her whole point then. If this is something that you're going to age out of anyway, why are we spending any money putting people in jail for it?
There you go. There you go. I happen to think the drop-off at 25 and older has a lot more to do with getting a new career, you know, finishing your undergrad degree, getting married. Those probably have a bigger effect.
The parenting is one of the best predictors of all, you know. You can't get high as often because you can't hide it from your kids.
All right. And then the last one here from Dr. Budney is, well, there's two. There's one quote where he says, unfortunately, much of what we know from earlier research is based on smoking marijuana with much lower doses of THC than are commonly used today. All we know so far is more people are showing up to ERs with adverse effects from marijuana. To me, that's an indictment of the marijuana that University of Mississippi is making. But what do we have to say about the research and comparing, you know, relative potencies over time?
What's funny about this is Craig Reinerman has shown that basically if you ask people not, you know, how potent is your pot or anything like that, but literally how high do you get, you know, just this 1-6 scale, I get totally baked or I get a little bit high or, you know, something in between, that has stayed pretty much the same throughout the last couple of decades. And so it's not that people are actually getting much, much higher so much as they're smoking markedly less. Those days in the 70s when you'd sit on the porch swing and smoke two whole joints are fortunately behind us. It's now a one and two hit kind of cannabis. And in fact, in the long run, that exposes us to fewer respiratory irritants. And if you don't have a vaporizer handy, in fact, you're less likely to get symptoms of bronchitis and things like that when the cannabis is stronger.
All right. And to close things out, the killer quote from Dr. Budney, quote, it is just as hard to treat cannabis addiction as it is to treat alcohol addiction.
Wow. I mean, how do you measure how hard it is to treat something. I got to admit, we've got 4 session treatments for each. They're comparably effective. And in truth, the base rate of alcohol addiction is more than 3 times the base rate of cannabis so-called dependence. So I just find this a little bit of an overstatement, shall we say.
Yeah. Well, we'll dig a little bit deeper into the statistics of big rehab and just how big a market that is in hour 2. But for now, that's all the time we got with Dr. Mitch here in hour 1. Remember, you can send your questions directly to Dr. Mitch by emailing 420research at gmail.com. That's 420research at gmail.com. And Dr. Mitch, thank you so much. And we'll talk to you next week.
Looking forward to it.
All right. When we come back, we'll have time for a radical rant on the new Don't Be a Lab Rat campaign. This is the new Colorado anti-marijuana teen campaign where they're putting human-sized lab rat cages up as a performance art thing. It's the damnedest thing. We're going to talk all about it, plus show you 4 of their new videos that I don't think are going to get kids to stop smoking pot at all. We'll see you in a minute.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio. Tune in, turn on, get high, Lee educated.
Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
Scientists at Duke University discovered that marijuana permanently decreased the IQs of teens. Some dispute that study. But what if? Years from now, learn those scientists were right. Don't be a lab rat.com.
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Belville Show every weekday on 420radio.org.
I'm Radical Russ Belville, and I want to thank you for listening to 420 Radio. We couldn't survive without you and our sponsors, and I'd like you to check out one of our prime sponsors, the National Cannabis Coalition. I've been working with NCC since June of 2012, and I'm proud to be part of the team they have assembled. National Cannabis Coalition is building the partnerships with reformers, lawmakers, and industry we need to be successful. Visit the National Cannabis Coalition website at nationalcannabiscoalition.com or the easier-to-remember ncc420.com. That's where you'll get the exclusive first look at my radical rants, as well as informative articles from the nation's top cannabis pundits. Visit ncc420.com today, and if you have your phone handy, text Russ to 420-420 to support NCC and 420 Radio. It's a free text message that helps us help you end adult marijuana prohibition. Learn more at ncc420.com, and thanks for supporting independent marijuana legalization public radio.
You can't handle the truth.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
You have offended my family.
Hey, this is great, man.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
I know nothing.
I support a change in law. To end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
We don't need no stinking budget.
Homosexuality, no. Immorality, generally.
How in the century you have slurred the meaning
out of the words, we, the people.
Be warned, this is not your mother's marijuana.
You gotta ask yourself a question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
I want to ask you a bunch of questions. I want to have them answered immediately.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical Rant.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It's 40, about 50 after the hour, and just a second ago, you saw the first of the new commercials from the Don't Be a Lab Rat campaign. This particular one is called Hotbox, and of course, you saw it showing a bunch of teenagers hotboxing a car and the warning text that, well, we don't know. It could cause an 8-point IQ drop, but, you know, some scientists dispute that, but, you know, we just don't know. So whatever you do, don't smoke pot, because what if years from now we find out they were right? What if we find out that they were absolutely right and you lose all that IQ? Of course, will you be smart enough to notice? But anyway, yeah, they have that ad. In fact, here's the same ad in Spanish for you, which I'm not going to try to read the Spanish because my pronunciation sucks. But there you go. Same basic ad. But now we've got the warning in Spanish that you could lose 8 IQ points if you smoke pot, according to Duke University researchers. But what if, just what if years from now we discover that those scientists were right and pot really did cause that 8-point IQ loss? The problem with this kind of thinking, though, is that we should have found that out by now, shouldn't we have? It's not as if legalization is inventing marijuana. It's been around for a long time, and kids have been using it for a long time. Where's that generation of cognitively declined Bob Marley kids that we should be worried about here? They don't show up. And this kind of scaremongering is not going to be effective on kids. If anything, hyperbolic TV ads about the dangers of marijuana have led to more kids using marijuana in some cases. In fact, this is from the Denver Post reporting on this. And they point out that the DARE campaign, a staple in classrooms 2 decades ago, has been shown in numerous studies to have had little impact on teen drug use. A study published last year revealed that when parents try to discourage their kids from using drugs by talking about their own youthful experimentation, kids are less likely to perceive drug use as harmful. A study from 2005 showed that anti-drug ads often backfire and are instead prompting experimental curiosity in kids, in part because they cause kids to think that everybody else is already doing drugs. So this ad campaign, Mike Sukel is in charge of it, and his company making the ad campaign. This is a $2 million grant. Now, this $2 million is funded largely because the state of Colorado sued some pharmaceutical companies a while back. So there is a certain irony to pharmaceutical money being used for an anti-pot campaign, huh? Well, I don't know if that's irony. It's to be expected, right? But anyway, this Lab Rat campaign isn't just a TV commercial in English and Spanish. They're also putting these ads into theaters during the previews, as if there weren't enough previews. Here's the first of those ads entitled IQ.
Answer the following questions by raising your hands.
Are you a teenager? Have you smoked weed? Do you smoke more than once a week? Do you have IQ points to spare? Scientists from Duke University found that teen marijuana use permanently reduced IQs by 8 points.
Thanks for your participation.
Don'tbealabrat.com. Okay, I want to be in the theater, first of all, when this goes up and you got all these kids raising their hands. That's going to be a lot of fun, right? If anything, once again, you're going to show the kid who's in the theater who doesn't smoke pot, when he looks around and sees all these hands going up and people laughing about it, that it's really no big deal, that he's being lied to once again. Mason Tvert from MPP, I think, had the best reaction to this. Of course, Mason was the co-petitioner who got marijuana legalized in 2012 in Colorado. And he just points out this is the same old scaremongering tactic with kids with just a little twist, right? The original was, you know, show them the fried egg and say, this is your brain, this is drugs. Any questions? And now the new version is, well, this is your brain and this is drugs and, well, your brain might fry. Some scientists think it might fry, some don't, but you don't want to find out later, do you? Oh my God. Here, let's take a look at another one. This is the one, the movie theater ad, Don't Be a Lab Rat in Colorado. This one's entitled Schizophrenia.
Answer the following questions by raising your hands.
Are you a teenager? Have you smoked weed? Does schizophrenia concern you? Scientists from Bristol University found that teenage marijuana use increases your risk of schizophrenia.
Thanks for your participation.
Don'tbealabrat.com. Now, any kid who jumps on the internet has some knowledge of the Google, otherwise known as all of them, can jump on and find the rates worldwide of schizophrenia and psychosis diagnosis, and find that there is no statistically significant rise or fall in schizophrenia rates over a century, during which the last half of that century there was a great increase in cannabis use. The most recent research shows that there is a better and stronger correlation genetically than anything else, and that the gene that leads to schizophrenia also seems to predict greater cannabis use. It's not that cannabis leads to schizophrenia, it's that schizophrenics are led to cannabis. Here's the final of the theater lab rat ads.
Answer the following questions by raising your hands.
Are you a teenager? Have you smoked weed? Do you remember the first question? Northwestern University scientists discovered that teen marijuana use caused lasting memory loss.
Thanks for your participation.
Don'tbealabrat.com. I can already hear the laughter in movie theaters all across Colorado at the opening of the next, oh, what the hell do kids watch now? Twilight? Transformers? Something with lots of explosions. I don't know. But I can already hear the laughter coming from those theaters as kids start yelling out, are you a teenager? As do you remember the last question? And again, every teenager sitting in that theater that sees a whole bunch of hands going up when the question is asked, have you smoked weed? Is going to go, oh shit, I'm not one of the cool kids. I haven't smoked weed yet. These ads are going to backfire. This is the worst, stupidest attempt to portray the kinder, gentler drug war that I've yet seen. You want to stop kids from smoking pot? Make it a boring adult thing. In fact, we saw the rates of teenage marijuana use drop in the states that adopted medical marijuana because suddenly grandma's glaucoma medicine isn't that rebellious. The final thing I'll show you here, this is not just the theater ads and the TV ads. They're actually doing performance art on this, people. They are taking these full-size, human-size cages. I'm not shitting you. Lab rat cages. And putting them out in front of the public library and other places where teens might run into them. The size of a, it's a lab rat cage. Big water bottle thing on the side, like a lab rat cage would have. And the text will say, volunteers needed. Must have a developing brain. Must smoke weed. Must not be concerned about schizophrenia. You know, if I was a teenager in Colorado, the first thing I would do is get like six or seven of my friends to fill up one of those cages and hold a bunch of signs that say, where's our free weed? This is just the dumbest thing I have ever seen. $2 million of ad revenue money at work there, folks, to come up with lab rat performance art. Again, you want to convince kids not to use marijuana? Figure out why they don't like Chardonnay. Figure out why they don't wear mom jeans. Make it uncool. Make it a standard, everyday adult thing. You do that, you're going to make the kids think it's not as cool and not be as interested in getting into it. Or just, hey, how about this? How about just being honest with them? How about just being honest with the kids? Tell them it's not as bad as alcohol, it's not as bad as tobacco, it's not as bad as any of the other drugs you could do, but you're a kid, wait till you're an adult. That's all the time we got. Stay tuned for hour two.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
Stay tuned for hour two. We got a stupid prohibition story, and we're going to go behind the headlines on the profit in big rehab. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.